Welcome to GW Integrative Medicine, the podcast about disease prevention and health promotion from the Office of Integrative Medicine and Health at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. I'm Dr. Lee Frame, Director of Integrative Medicine and an Associate Professor of Clinical Research and Leadership here at GW.
And I'm Dr. Misha Kogan, Medical Director of the GW Center for Integrative Medicine and Associate Professor of Medicine here at GW. Today on the pod, we're going to talk about C15, essential fatty acid, with Dr. Stephanie Van Watson.
Dr. Van Watson is the CEO and co-founder of Serafina Therapeutics, Inc. in San Diego, California. She and her husband, Dr. Eric Van Watson, made the groundbreaking discovery of C15, a fatty acid.
Also known as pentadecanoic acid, C15 is an essential fatty acid that has largely disappeared from the modern Western diet. Doctors Van Watsons are bringing it to the market as a food fortifier and nutritional supplement called Fatty 15.
Welcome to GW Integrative Medicine, Stephanie.
Great. Wonderful to be here. Hi, Lee. Hi, Misha.
So we are so excited to have you here. We're going to definitely nerd out on this very unknown topic to most, even our well-educated listeners. I'm sure many of them have not heard about this. So let's start with, what is C15? Is it really new? And what do we need to know about it, just kind of in the basics?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as you shared, C15, it's the first essential fatty acid to be discovered since omega-3, which was over 90 years ago. C15, you know, has been known since the 1950s. It is an odd chain saturated fat that was recognized, but it was really seen as it's present at such low levels in foods that it wasn't seen as bioactive or important. So it really wasn't until recently that it's been discovered not only as bioactive and healthy, but essential to maintaining our baseline health, which has been really exciting. When we talk more about C15, we talk about what are essential fatty acids, right? So these are nutrients that our bodies must have to maintain our baseline physiological health, but our bodies can't make. So that means that we have to get these critical nutrients like C15 through our diet or supplements. So that's all great, but, you know, really the question here is what make C15 essential. And I'll sum it down to three key points so that we can kind of dive in further in other areas. But first and foremost, C15, you know, as this odd chain saturated fat, very simply, it physically strengthens our cell membranes and protects our cells and therefore us against premature breakdown. So if our cell membranes are fragile, we age and break down faster, they're stronger with C15. Very simply, we can live longer. The second is that, you know, C15 has no double bonds, and therefore it's highly resistant to lipid peroxidation, which is a major driver of aging health-related breakdown. And then beyond that kind of core benefit of strengthening our cells, we've been able to show that C15 helps to repair mitochondria. It aids in cellular signaling, you know, the fancy schmancy stuff, right? Like activating AMPK, PPAR alpha delta, inhibiting mTOR and JAK-STAT. So all these pathways that, you know, and help to support our metabolic, liver, heart, and immune health.
Thank you for that. That's very helpful.
Yeah, fascinating stuff.
So now that we kind of have a basic understanding of C15, how did we get it before there was a supplement? Supplements are great, but obviously we were getting it somewhere else first. Is it in our diet? Do we get it from the sun? Where does it come from?
We were. So I like how you're good nod to vitamin D. That with C15, we did. We used to get it from whole dairy fat. That is by far our primary source of C15, comes from whole fat dairy. Now, as you know, both Lee and Misha, that we have decreased our intake of dairy fat methodically over the last 40 years. So that has led to decreased intake of C15 and therefore lower levels in our body. Now, importantly, with dairy fat, things have changed. So we now know, for example, like if cows eat corn versus grass, they'll have less C15 in their milk. Non-fat milk has no C15. Plant-based milks have no C15. So a lot of changes that have led to it coming out of our diet where we used to get it.
But there's potentially some real drawbacks to dairy fat as well. So is the C15 worth the risk of the saturated fats, or is there some detriment to that still?
Yeah, it's a great question because, you know, as we will talk about nutritional C15 deficiencies, right, the natural question is just, can we just go back to drinking whole dairy fat? And this may hold true for kids, right? And because it's in milk, every mammal gets milk from birth. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think we want to detract from that. But as we're talking about how do we get C15 over decades and really over a century of lifetime, to your point, Lee, that while dairy fat has 1% of the fat is C15, over 40% of fat in whole fat dairy are these pro-inflammatory even chain saturated fatty acids that continue to be associated with higher risks of type 2 diabetes, heart disease, fatty liver disease. So it's really finding the diamond in the rough. It also explains why, you know, research around dairy fat has been so mixed. It has this great C15 molecule, but a lot higher levels of the damaging, which is why the World Health Organization, they re-reviewed all the science on saturated fats just this last year. And in 2023, they came out with recommendations, and they still said C15 and C17 may be beneficial, but they're present at such low levels in dairy fat compared to the harmful fats that they still recommended people get less than 10% of their caloric intake from saturated fats.
What brought your focus to the C15? It's not like it's anything that I've ever heard before we started setting up this podcast. How did you stumble upon this?
Yeah, Misha, it was an accident. So, I mean, some of the best discoveries.
Oh, right? I thought the best things in science.
It was a whoops. I'm a veterinary epidemiologist. I was working for the World Health Organization and CDC, and I was working in infectious diseases at the time. And then about 20 years ago, I was recruited by the Navy to serve this role as a veterinary epidemiologist, not for people, but for Navy dolphins. So, you know, I thought, well, that'll be fun to do for a couple of years, be in San Diego and helping dolphins. Ended up being there for 20. And long story short, you know, Navy takes such good care of their dolphins that live in San Diego Bay, they live longer than dolphins in the wild. And because they were getting old, they were getting this like larger population of geriatric dolphins living into their 40s and 50s. In the wild, they lived to their 20s, right? So it's like we had these geriatric dolphins. And amazingly, what we saw was that these older dolphins, some of them were getting, they were looking like us, like they're getting high cholesterol and chronic inflammation, fatty liver disease, Alzheimer's. And so that led to the gift that we had, which was an incredibly reliable set of serum samples that we could go back, apply metabolomics to look at thousands of small molecules present in their blood, as well as in their all-fish diet, to look at which small molecules predicted the healthiest aging dolphins. We thought it would be omega-3s because it's like, well, all they eat are fish.
Right, fish.
And, right? So it's like there's no, you know, I don't want to say there's no hamburgers, there's no, you know, chips, just fish. And so we were super surprised to find that omega-3s didn't even make the list of predicting a healthier aging dolphins. Instead, it was C15, this odd chain saturated fat. So it turned our attention to that and moved C15 to the lab. 8 studies and 3 years later, you know, it was like, wow, something the world needs to pay attention to.
So can humans get C15 from fish as well?
So we can get some C15 from fish, but what we learned from the dolphins is that C15 is present in some but not all fish, which is why we had some dolphins were getting more C15 than others based upon the type of fish they were eating. Additionally, dolphins don't like fillet their fish and cook them, right? They eat the whole fish. And when we looked at even the fish that had C15 in it, the highest levels were in the skin and the heads of the fish, which we tend not to eat. So this is why C15 has been a very reliable biomarker in humans of dairy fat.
Interesting. And so in humans, there's probably minimal intake of C15 at this point. Are we seeing nutritional deficiencies leading to some of these diseases you saw in the dolphins?
Yeah, absolutely. So interestingly, while we were making these discoveries, higher C15 levels equal healthier dolphins, this same pattern was showing up in humans. And, you know, today there are now studies of studies, right? Like meta-analyses of very large prospective cohort studies following tens of thousands of people over decades versus our, like, you know, 100 dolphins, showing that people who have higher C15, same thing, lower risk of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, fatty liver disease, and specific types of cancer. So as this research has been moving together in parallel, it now is becoming pretty clear that we need, whether we're a dolphin or human, that we need at least 20 micromolars or 5 micrograms per mil of C15 in our cells in order to adequately protect against long-term, you know, cellular, metabolic, liver, and heart health. And that's pretty specific that we can get to. If you have levels below that, the cells become fragile and then lead to these, you know, long-term chronic conditions that we're seeing rising in younger people. And then if you get above that, then you are protected. And we know that our C15 levels have been declining population-wide, and it's all matching up with regard to how C15 can help.
Yeah, I find it fascinating because, you know, I had no idea until Lee sent us an email, let's do this podcast. And now I realize, you know, preparing for today, I was looking at some of my assessments. We use quite a lot of functional tests in the clinic, and we're already assessing C15. At every test that we run, what's called NutriVal, C15 is part of the test. So now, literally, in 1 hour, you're changing my practice. So I will obviously be paying a lot more attention because I frankly never truly paid attention to this marker until recently. So
that's one of the downsides actually to a functional approach, right? You have so much data,
so
you're often overwhelmed by it.
But the beauty of it, now we have pieces that are gradually accumulating. So now I'll be paying more attention to it. And like right now, I had a patient yesterday. Now I'm looking at her test and I'm like, it's pretty lowish. So
yeah,
I
think it's like, yeah, to your point that, you know, functional medicine, thank goodness. I mean, because like you said, even though, you know, all these data are being collected and it is hard to kind of figure out what to do with it. In this case, it's a great example where there it is. And we are having a lot of physicians, Misha, like yourself, say like, wait, I have C15 information because you can test for it. And physicians are saying they're surprised at how many of their patients have low levels.
Well, there's a research project duct frame for us.
Oh, yeah.
Just get
You're
us
reading
students,
my mind.
Analyze our data because we have thousands of these tests and see where we can correlate.
Amazing.
We have plenty of students looking for research projects, and I think
That's
this would
true.
Be a fascinating one. So speaking of that, this is not broadly being used clinically yet. Do you see that coming down the pipeline, or are we still too early in the research stages for that?
You know, I think the data are there for physicians to be looking at C15, such as yourselves. It's to the point, one of our advisors is Dr. Ronald Krauss, and he's a leader in saturated fatty acids and fatty acids. And, you know, the way that Ron put it is the culmination of data and studies, all of which, by the way, is available at discoverc15.com. You can't explain C15 away anymore. And the urgency of, if we are indeed sitting on population-wide C15 nutritional deficiencies, like, you know, vitamin C and scurvy and vitamin D and rickets, if indeed we're sitting on this, right, and we can't afford to wait. So, and it's so simple to be able to say, does this person have low C15? We know that if you increase your C15 intake, those levels go up. I mean, this is something that's fixable. So the urgency is being more driven by, you know, one of our leading hypotheses is that NAFLD, fatty liver disease, now affecting 1 in 3 people globally, NAFLD showed up out of nowhere, right? And the hypothesis is that NAFLD is a nutritional C15 deficiency syndrome.
Interesting.
It is so interesting. I mean, because the test itself is pretty straightforward. I don't know if the common labs like LabCorp and Quest are testing for it, but definitely the functional testing, Genova is not the only one. I'm sure there are others that do that too.
So it's interesting that you bring up NAFLD because I was reading the other day an article about NASH. Now it's in mice, so we're going to view it with a grain of salt, but looking at their C15 status and showing how it was actually stimulated through fiber intake based on a single bug, Parabacteroides distensanus. I've not heard of that one, to be honest. I'm not familiar with it. But that was an interesting concept to me, too, because perhaps, you know, a high fiber diet is beneficial in part through this production of C15 as well, which has also gone down, right? We've decreased our milk fat intake, we've decreased our fiber, and so we're kind of just generally heading in the direction of C15 nutritional deficiencies. I don't know if you know anything about that, Stephanie, but that's an area that I get really excited about too. Is there any way we could have the gut microbiome help support us a little better?
Oh, for sure. I mean, such an exciting area, right, of research. And that paper was really agreed, very interesting of, you know, saying they've been able to show in mice that high fiber decreases fatty liver disease and components of type 2 diabetes in this mouse model. And when they dove in, they then figured out, Lee, like you're saying, that by eating fiber, it increased, it was inulin. The bacteria used the inulin to make C15. And then in the end, they attributed the benefits of fiber to C15. So, super exciting. So there's now evidence that the microbiome, you know, plays a role in making C15 through fiber. On the opposite side, there's also there's a clinical trial with C15 supplementation that came out from Singapore a month or so ago, and they showed that in the study they had adult women with fatty liver disease. Group one was put on a low calorie diet of 1,500 calories. No, thank you.
Like, yeah, really.
Wouldn't last long on that diet. The second group was a low calorie diet plus Mediterranean diet. And the third group was low calorie Mediterranean plus C15 supplementation, which is a giant lift, right? Because just decreasing your calories and eating the Mediterranean diet are going to have great benefits, which it did. What they showed was that in that third group, that the third group had lower LDL cholesterol levels. It had the greatest decrease in liver fat and whole body fat. And interestingly, the C15 supplemented group had greater growth of a gut microbe called a Bifidobacterium adolescentis, which is like a super good little microbe that has actually been tied to longevity in multiple species. So there's evidence that C15 helps healthy bacteria get to grow. And then along with the paper that you shared, Lee, that healthy bacteria can also help make more C15. So it's, you know, having that healthy gut, having C15 help with a healthy gut and vice versa, it's really exciting.
Oh, yes, very exciting. I think that's another line of research that I would love to see some of our students embark on. Can we link so healthy diet, fiber intake, and C15 to some of the outcomes that we're already studying?
So, Stephanie, I was recently reading the paper connecting C15 to endocannabinoid system. Would love to pick your brain on a couple of things. You know, my significant interest is in the cannabinoid system and how can we support it. And sounds like there's pretty interesting discoveries, particularly let's try to identify some connections to neurodegenerative disorders like Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is one of, there's a lot of exciting avenues. This one's particularly exciting with C15. So we know that C15 directly has a lot of benefits, and as an essential fatty acid, right, nature's using this super simple molecule to do really important things on its own. However, you know, an essential fatty acid should also allow our body to use it to make a second or third molecules, metabolites, that have their own benefits. And so when we went looking, we actually went back to the dolphins to look for any evidence of C15 metabolites that looked good. And we found one that was just a buddy sitting right next to C15, and it's called pentadecanoyl carnitine. That's a mouthful, or PDC is what we're calling it. And this metabolite, we're like, well, let's test it. Let's throw it against a bunch of cell-based receptors and see if it has evidence of activity. And so, again, super surprised to find that pentadecanoyl carnitine, or PDC, did a lot of surprising things. The first is it fully activated both CB1 and CB2 receptors. So in the end, when we published that back in 2022, this is the second ever discovered full-acting endocannabinoid. So getting to, Misha, you know, your sweet spot, which is just understanding we have these receptors in our body and brain, not though cannabinoids are obviously good and helping with that, it's like, why are they there in the first place? And so, so just the fact that our body uses fatty acids to make these.
I mean, we know if you take out CB1 receptor in mice, you develop a rapidly progressing Alzheimer's disease. And if you take CB2, you develop severe osteoporosis. So if you found the molecule that somehow can augment an age decline CB1 receptor atrophy, that could be a pretty revolutionary going forward. I mean, of course, we'll have to have a lot of research done before we can say anything, but sounds like a possible fascinating connection.
Yeah, I agree. It sounds very promising. And it makes me wonder about, because a lot of this is coming from dairy, and we always hear about the bone effects of dairy, is I wonder if part of that is not due to calcium and all the traditional things that we think about, but if it's due to this CB2 stimulation.
I believe it.
Oh, so much research.
So much research. All those old hippies mixing pot with a bunch of oil and to cookies. Maybe they were onto something after all.
You know, a big question we have too is going back to the nutritional deficiency component, that if we know we have low C15, that's going to translate to low PDC. And, you know, so if PDC is helping with better sleep, improved mood, less joint pain, then what has happened when we've taken C15 right out of our diets, that, and what impact could that possibly be having on, you know, this increase in sleep disorders and mood disorders? Could this be a contributing factor to that rise? And again, something that's fixable, which is really exciting.
Well, while Lee was asking questions, I went into charts and found some patients who actually have one patient who has a liver disease and has a super low level. Hmm. So I will definitely be proposing to him that he tries. And I also looked at my own result, and mine was pretty high. So I do eat a lot of dairy. Mostly as yogurt, mostly as
fermented dairy,
mostly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Jeff Schwimmer, Dr. Jeff Schwimmer at Rady Children's Hospital, he started the first fatty liver disease clinic for kids. And Jeff, when we published that dolphins got fatty liver disease, Jeff reached out and he's like, what? Dolphins don't eat sugar. They aren't on ultra-processed foods. So is this really the same thing? And he looked at, sent him a bunch of slides of dolphin livers, and he's like, this is the exact same disease. Like, what? Like, you're just blowing my mind. So Jeff did a study, which he published in 2022, and he showed the higher the C15 levels in kids, it was inversely related to fat in their liver. And so that was pretty, pretty fascinating. And then he has since done a clinical trial with young adults with history of fatty liver disease with C15 supplementation. Stay tuned. Those results are currently in peer review and really will be Jeff's exciting story to share.
Oh, well, we'll definitely have to have him on to talk about that. So one of my questions about C15 is we're hearing it's typically in relatively low amounts in the diet. It has some clearly wonderful beneficial effects, but are there potentially any downsides? Is there an issue about having too much C15?
Thus far, we've looked and we haven't seen anything. I think it's getting back to C15 is an essential fatty acid that every mammal gets from birth. And so it is an extraordinarily safe molecule, especially given its beneficial activities. When we first screened C15 for safety among cell lines, we used this program called BioMap by DiscoverX. And the person who leads those studies actually reached out to us. And she's like, I don't think you know what you're sitting on. She's like, we never see this amount of safety in cells with this level of beneficial activities. She's like, you need to pay attention to this molecule. So, of course, we went through the process of going above and beyond of assessing safety as C15 as a supplement. And we did got generally recognized as safe or GRAS status to be able to demonstrate its safety. So it's deemed safe for children older than 4 and up. This includes women who are pregnant and nursing. And up to 250 milligrams per day. So it's good. And then with 2 clinical trials, no adverse effects were found. And these were people who had it at 200 or 300 milligrams per day.
Yeah, that's definitely quite convincing that, you know, at least in the near future, we don't have to worry about too much of this because people are not really getting it from their diets. And if they're on a supplement, I would hope they're being monitored by their healthcare provider. So we'll know if they get above the recommended range.
That's right. And that it's, you know, this isn't like, oh, here's a supplement where you're going to take 10 times the amount. Right. It's literally like the word supplement. It's supplementing what we are no longer getting from our diet, but without the, you know, the even chain saturated fats that are harmful.
So, Stephanie, any thoughts on looking more into some neurodegenerative diseases and what connection could be here and how would you go about looking into this?
Yeah, neurodegenerative diseases, it's really, you know, the frontier that hasn't been closely looked at. Lots of studies with regard to heart, liver, metabolic health. And so it's obviously, it's kind of the missing piece, right, of increased diseases, chronic diseases we're seeing, you know, over the past decades. So what we're focusing on, which is directly relevant to neurodegenerative diseases, is at the same time we were making these discoveries in dolphins, and it's a very specific pathophysiology phenotype with C15 deficiencies, right? It's like we have a low C15 in our cell membranes. The cells become more fragile, including our red blood cells. This becomes associated with lipid peroxidation and iron overload. Now, at the same time this was all happening, there was a group at Columbia University who published this incredible discovery of a fourth way that our cells are dying. And it's called ferroptosis. So, right, we all learn in our cell biology classes that there are 3 ways our cells die, which is autophagy, necrosis, and apoptosis. This group discovered a fourth way. And very specifically, it's called, what's involved is lipid peroxidation. So fragile fats in our cell membranes combining with iron, which then results in this massive amount of reactive oxygen species that kills our mitochondria. We believe that ferroptosis, which they published in 2012, over 10,000 peer-reviewed papers have been published on ferroptosis since then. It is now been recognized as a contributor to type 2 diabetes, heart disease, fatty liver disease, but also neurodegenerative diseases. And iron overload itself has been a major contributor. So our big question is, nutritional C15 deficiencies may in fact be the cause of ferroptosis, which is driving the rise in multiple diseases. What would be fascinating is looking specifically at neurodegenerative diseases and this link between lipid peroxidation, chronic inflammation, and iron overload, which have all been contributing components of neurodegenerative diseases.
It looks like this podcast is first of several, because I'm sure that we will have to pick your brain on, since we have patients and we could easily go back and look at some of their C15 levels and see what we can do here. I mean, it makes a lot of sense what you're saying, particularly the fact that all of this is now in clinical practice. I mean, we assess oxidative stress, we assess C15. So there's no real reason not to move this from kind of research arena pretty quickly into clinical field.
Yeah, Misha, absolutely.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's things that are very tangible. So, and then including a lipid peroxidation. Also, there's a super simple test, right, called the osmotic fragility test, where, and you know, C15 is helping to strengthen all of our cell membranes, but one of the easiest ones to pull and test are the red blood cells. So we've been able to show C15 completely alleviates anemia in multiple models, and it's doing it just by strengthening the cells. So an osmotic fragility test is not just an indicator of red blood cell health, that if paired with low C15, it's an indicator to kind of the whole body state on, you know, how are our cells doing?
Well, that seems like a great place to end. Lots of future conversations to be had here, but that is all the time we have for today. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us.
Great, thank you. And I look forward to hearing your students' results on their studies.
Oh, absolutely. Us too.
This is the GW Integrative Medicine Podcast from the GW Office of Integrative Medicine and Health.
I'm Dr. Lee Frame.
And I'm Dr. Misha Kilden.
Thanks for listening.
The Office of Integrative Medicine and Health produces the GW Integrative Medicine Podcast with funds from your donations. Your generosity allows us to raise awareness of the benefits of integrating whole person care, including evidence-based complementary therapies, into healthcare broadly. Help us continue to grow the podcast by making a tax-deductible donation on our website, smhs.gwu.edu/OIMH. Click the Give Now button on the left. While you're there, sign up for our free monthly newsletter for even more evidence-based content, including free webinars.